Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, I'm going to hit the record button for this version of our podcast.
Sounds like a plan.
The other one is recorded in memoriam in our minds and memories forever.
Right.
But no one else will ever be able to hear it.
That's right. It's a shame because we told all kinds of secrets.
Jamie, I have a question for you.
What do you have for it?
Prior to this version of the Americans finale on West Coast Project, do you know who the West Coast Projects are? Do you know who the Golden State Warriors are?
I do.
Do you know who Steph Curry is?
I do.
All right, who is he?
Steph Curry is a basketball player. He plays for the Golden State Warriors.
All right, and one final question. Mm-hmm. Do you know who Michael Rapaport is?
I do now.
All right, well, Michael Rapaport has a very funny podcast, and he has a special guest, and I want to introduce you to him.
All right,
so listen up.
Podcast, so we have access. We have the privilege of having access to Bizarro Steph Curry. We seem to be the only people that he likes speaking to. As belligerent as Bizarro Steph Curry can be, I'm privileged to speak to him. I feel like it's an honor. It's a little scary. He seems as the finals come closer and as the playoffs have gotten more competitive, he's gotten a little bit more hostile, but still, like I said before, I had a number at a phone booth outside a bar in the East Bay, East Oakland, which is where he hangs out. It's a bar / pool hall. I called that a few times. And it didn't go through, so we're going to try to get Bizarro Steph Curry on the phone before game one for this LeBron James episode. See where his head's at, see how he's feeling, and, you know, see what's going on. So let's see what we get here.
So just real quick, so if people, you may not know Michael Rapaport, he played Daryl Crow on Justified. And he's a TV producer, movie producer / comedian. He's got a really funny podcast. So anyway, here's Bizarro again.
I am Rapport Stereo Podcast calling phone booth, pay phone booths, one of the last pay phone booths in the country.
Yo, who this?
Yo, hey, this is Michael Rapport.
Yo, my man, yo, check this out. Yo, I told you don't call this motherfucking line no more, man.
Okay, I got that Bizarro Steph Curry.
But you're still calling, punk-ass motherfucker, and I told you what I was going to do. All right, y'all were talking a lot of shit.
Well, I actually am a fan.
No. You and your man, Monetti, whatever the fuck his name is, y'all was popping a lot of shit during the OKC series. I'm listening to y'all motherfuckers talk shit. I'm letting you know when I see you, I'm approaching.
Okay, listen, I get it. I just wanted to check in with you, see how you're feeling before the NBA Finals.
Yo, my man, whatever the fuck your name is, don't be asking me questions and shit like that, all right? I know you was betting on the games and shit, and now you owe me $50, all right? So when I see you, is it $55? Yo, how much does motherfucker owe me? What do you owe me? How much does motherfucker owe me? You don't owe me shit? Yo, my man, I ain't talking to you.
I like how they have dogs and sirens in the background and horns honking on the East Bay Oakland streets.
Yo, you better hold that motherfucker dog, dude. I kicked that motherfucker dog down the street, boy. What you want to do? That's what I thought, bitch ass motherfucker.
Well, listen,
I'm going to tell you right now. I'm out here at East Bay, soaking my ligaments, getting my body right, sipping on some Turkish vodka and all that old fly shit. You know what I'm saying? These motherfuckers out in Cleveland, talking shit, talking greasy, OKC motherfuckers giggling and all that fly shit. You see how I does it. I'm gonna tell you right now, that little fish-eyed fool, that little fish-eyed motherfucker Ty Lue, little fish-eyed fool.
Cleveland's head coach.
You want to come out and get some? You can get it too, motherfucker. I'll do you crazier than AI did it. I'll be hopscotching over your shit. We're shitting on it. And if I hear you talking shit about Klay Thompson, I'm going to step to you about that also. Talking about his goatee, about his face, and his nose and all that. And now they saying that you, Rapaport, you look like Klay Thompson.
Well, I didn't say that. Somebody on Twitter said that I resemble Klay
Thompson.
You're
an ugly motherfucker, Rapaport. You don't look like my man Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is a pretty motherfucker. You look like shit.
But listen, I didn't say it.
I'm letting you know you look like shit. Hey, yo, what? 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 Motherfucker, I said I'm on the phone, man. Look, I'm trying to play. Motherfucker, just give me some chicken wings, man. I need... Give me 35 chicken wings before a shoot around. Look, man, I got to go, man. Check this out. Yo, next time you call me, you need to send me a money order. Put some motherfucking money in Western Union next time you want me on your motherfucking podcast.
So that's Bizarro Steph Curry, Jamie. He is the wonderful Wood Harris, who you may know from The Wire, Avon Barksdale.
Uh-huh.
Pretty funny. But, Jamie, I thought we could have Bizarro Gabriel help us out on this podcast.
I think that might be a plan.
Bizarro Gabriel has been on a couple of our other podcasts. He comes and goes. He doesn't sit in the whole time, but...
Yeah, but he's always entertaining.
If you have any questions for him, we'll get him to answer for you.
All right, thanks.
So, Jamie, this is our wrap-up podcast for The Americans for Season 4, and you have some observations you made from earlier episodes, right, in earlier seasons?
Okay, so earlier episodes in the season, I've been rewatching The Americans, and so I have earlier episodes this season and earlier seasons in the series that I've noticed some things, and it's amazing, like the stuff I've seen. like first of all, the very first time that there was ever any sort of issue about the kids finding out about Philip and Elizabeth, it was really Elizabeth who was upset about the idea of the kids finding out. And it happened in the first season. And it's around the emotional sort of event of Philip wanting to defect. And remember when Timashev was there? Timashev was that first, the bad guy who did all that awful stuff to Elizabeth back when they were in Russia. And then in the pilot episode, they captured him. He was a defector who had gotten like $3 million to come to turn.
Wait, so let me ask you, Jamie. So do you think Elizabeth was preventing the kids from knowing about the spydom because it's strategic or because she wanted to protect her children?
No, she wanted to protect them. Like she, Philip was saying, you know, I want to defect, let's do it. They'll give us $6 million. They'll give us three for turning and they'll give us three for being such high value gets, you know, like.
Do we ever know how he came up with that number?
Yes, because Timashev actually tells him that. He says when he's in the trunk and he's trying to talk himself out of being whatever, murdered or sent back or whatever it is that they were going to do with him originally, he says to him, just please let me go. And, you know, the government will give you $3 million. They'll give you another three for just being who you are. They'll give you $6 million. You know, but he offered that to Philip and Philip almost took it because I don't know if you remember what happened in that episode. But at one point, and actually in the scene where Timashev eventually gets killed, they're in the garage in that scene. And this is the one where he dies. But before he dies, Philip goes into the garage and opens the trunk, and he's getting Timashev out, and he's going to take him over to Stan's house. Like, that's his plan. And Timashev is trying to fight him. And Philip says, no, idiot, I'm taking you over there, or something equivalent to that. And he says, you know, like, I'm turning you in. I'm turning myself in. And, like, that's his plan. And then Elizabeth comes in and ruins everything.
Bad and, Elizabeth.
Right? She's all... Okay, so... And then the other thing, the probably biggest, broadest sort of thing that I noticed from the earlier seasons is that I and other people, I assume, have been really hard on Elizabeth. And in a way, sort of hard on Carrie Russell because, you know, I've always said that Elizabeth is hard to like. And she really is. I mean, like, this season, she's gotten a little bit softer. And so it's easier to kind of see who she is and appreciate who she is. But, you know, for the most part, she's an unsympathetic character. And, you know, one thing that I've noticed from the earlier seasons is that Elizabeth's not as dislikable as the way I took her in originally. She's just a product of her environment and a product of her training, and, you know, and that's who she is. I mean, she's got, like, all these secrets. And, I think part of it is the fact that we know more about her now. You know, the shame that she has, which is a big, I think it's a big force, you know, in her decision making and in her energy toward the cause and, you know, and all that stuff. I think that she, you know, that who she is at her core, being ashamed of her father and of, you know, his, I guess, apparent lack of patriotism, or whatever it is, that's been a driving force in her life. And that's what makes us feel like she is unsympathetic, because she's just always kind of like a machine. But she has feelings. And if you watch those earlier seasons, you can see it, you know. But it's just, she's just so, I don't know, she's always on the straight course, you know.
Like
the
Do you think it'll be harder for the Americans to stay interesting? Because... As the final two seasons wind down, we kind of know now there's going to be two more seasons, right?
That's right.
We know that about that. So, do you think it'll be harder to stay interesting? Because we know what happens, right? We know history, we know real life, we know mm-hmm. what happens, and we know that they really don't have that much of an effect on helping Russia do anything, really.
Right.
They're really not that effective in spy. You know, they know, they find out some stuff, but they don't really change anything that would have gone otherwise.
Right, right, right. Because we kicked the ass of communism. But I think that it really has the potential to sort of become really weak. But, you know, the solution to that is to burn everything to the ground. You know, and the lesson we have on that is really in Breaking Bad. You know, Breaking Bad is probably one of the best series ever. And, you know, the writers burned it all to the ground. There wasn't a thing left standing at the end of that series. And I think that's how you leave. That's how you go out.
It's really hard, though, for historical drama like The Americans to be interesting when we know the ending. Because we didn't really know the ending of Breaking Bad. We knew kind of the ending, that he's going to be Mr. Chips going into Scarface, but we didn't really know the ending. You could read a history book and know the ending of The Americans.
Well, okay, so you can know the ending of communism. You can know the ending of the USSR, but you can't really know the ending of their particular story, because think of it this way. I mean, there's so many ways that this could end. They could die. They could grow old in America and retire and sort of have their life. They could go back to Russia. Paige and Henry could take over the family business. You know, there are myriad ways that this series could end, but it's all about the personal relationships. It's about
exactly the power this series has. It makes those people so important to us that even though we kind of know what history has in store, we don't know what's in store for them, and we care about them so much that it's so interesting still.
Yep, that's exactly right. Oh, you know, it's so interesting. I mentioned this to you before when we were getting ready to record. Well, we thought we were recording. But Joe Weisberg, the creator of this series, has a brother. His name is, I think it's Joseph. No, I'm sorry. Jacob. I think it's Jacob. Weisberg, who, he's a podcaster. And he works for Slate, the magazine. And actually, like Slate is the podcast that Joe Weisberg and the Americans do the Americans podcast on. So it's kind of, I guess it's kind of, you know, all in the family, but anyway, so his brother has this podcast that he does, and he's really, interesting guy. You can tell he's definitely not, a spy or former spy, but, I was listening to one of the podcasts that he does, and it was really cool and really interesting. And he and his brother, couple of months ago, did something at like the the Y, one of the Ys in New York, where they sort of did this meld between some stuff that's going on right now in American politics and the Americans, because they both kind of touched on some things that were around centering around the 1980s and communism. And so they did this this event together where they talked about both the series and reality and the things that kind of tied into the other Weisberg's podcast. And I didn't get to go to the event, of course, but I thought it was really cool, really interesting.
Yeah, so that explains why Slate always has those premier stars from the show on their podcast, huh? It's a freaking brother. It's his brother's running this network.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, they have, And then, there's Panoply, which is like a part of it. 'Cause they say it's a Slate podcast on the Panoply network or something like that. And so I don't know what Panoply is, but yeah, I mean, those Weisbergs are tied into that Slate thing pretty closely.
Yeah. Wikipedia says Jacob Weisberg's the editor in chief of the Slate group. So they probably have a whole slew of entertainment related shows.
They do. And actually, there's one guy on there. There's one guy who is like one of the big wigs at Slate who sounds so much like you, Mike. I was listening to the podcast and I was like, wait, am I listening to Mike or am I listening to these other guys? I don't know. Yeah, it was really cool. Okay, so that's one of the things. It's Elizabeth from the earlier seasons. And the other thing that I noticed, it's a huge one, one of the other things, is the thing about Stan that you noticed this season was like that kind of, like you were saying, like it's like a rat nose twitch that he has.
Yeah.
He actually has that in the earlier seasons, but I only see it when he's either irritated by something or he's looking kind of like suspicious or something or uncomfortable. So I don't know if it's the actor, if it's Noah Emmerich who has that twitch, or if he has given that affect to his character. But
I'm guessing it's Noah Emmerich.
Yeah, it could be.
Like he's a little stressed or he's a little under the gun for an answer. Or he's like suspicious. He gives that little twitch. I bet that's Noah Emmerich.
Maybe so. It's possible. But, okay, so that's one of the things. The other so another one of the things is that Noah Emmerich used to be a lot skinnier. He was, like, way thin and super buff. And, like not buff, like, puffy muscles, but buff, like muscular. But no body fat. In the first season or two, he was, like, really, really – I wish I'd have noticed him before. It would have been nice to, you know, sort of check him out.
Oh, he's dreamy.
He is dreamy. What the heck, man? I like him. I would totally go out on a date with Noah Emmerich. Okay, so the other thing was that weird thing is that I think probably of all the cast members who look really different now – aside from the young kids who age, you know, it's Costa Ronan. He looks really different from the first season. And Philip looks really different. Like, I can't think of his name. What the heck is wrong with me? My brain. What's his name?
Matthew Reese. Yeah. Why does he look different?
He looks older. Like his face, like the tautness of his skin has kind of changed. He's still like extremely handsome, but you can tell he looks different from like the earlier seasons. And actually, I think last season, like season three, I think he joked about that and said that when the series first started, he used to be able to play his younger self. But, like, right around season three, they started telling him, like, in flashbacks, he couldn't play his younger self. So he was laughing at it. But yeah, I mean, I think of everybody, those two look the most different.
Yeah, I think Gad looks different, but maybe I'm thinking of Gad as John Boy.
No, you're not. That's the other one. Like, Gad looked really different.
Really puffy. Actually, he puffed up.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right, because I remember seeing when I first started rewatching, like when I started from season one, I was like, oh my God, Gad looks so young. And it's really weird because it's only been 4 years, but it's amazing. If you catch people at the right age, you know, it's like a tipping point or something, you know, you can really see them age. And if you don't, like if you miss that window, somebody could look the same for 10 years.
I think also Sandra looks different. I think she looks prettier than she looked at the beginning. She, for some reason, she looks very desirable now.
Her face has changed a little bit and her hair has changed a little bit. But you're right. She is prettier now than she was then. And I think part of it is that she may have gained a little weight because her face is a little bit fuller. So it looks more lush, like you can see more in her face, and then her hair is a bit longer and she wears it curlier, so it looks pretty.
So Jamie, so what are your predictions? What do you think is gonna, so first of all, there's 2 years left that would put them in about 1985, 1986 if they go real time,
right,
year to year, which they tend to do with the Americans. They tend to kind of stick to the timelines, like a year is a year.
Yeah, that's about right. I don't know. Okay, so I think, well, now, I don't know, because I think when the show started, it was 1981 or two. So it's a little less than a year, I think, for each one of them. But let's see, when was the fall of the Soviet Union? Later than 1985 or six?
Well, what do you call the fall of the Soviet Union?
Like the dissolution of it, like when it broke apart, like when they were like, okay, we're not going to be, you know, communists anymore. We're not going to be like.
Well, Jamie, I'm going to look on history.com.
I think.
1991. The Soviet flag flew over the Kremlin in Moscow for the last time.
You're so clever.
I got a search engine on my computer, Jamie. It's this coolest new thing.
Shut up, Mike.
On Christmas Day 1991, the Soviet, oh, thanks for the music website, the Soviet flag flew over the Kremlin in Moscow for the last time. A few days earlier, representatives from 11 Soviet republics, the Ukraine, the Russian Federation, Belarus, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Moldova, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, and stand next door, met in the Kazakh city of Alma-Ata and announced that they would no longer be part of the Soviet Union.
Wow. Wow. All the stands.
1991.
Well, that's interesting.
They declared they would establish a Commonwealth of Independent States. Also, three Baltic republics had already declared their independence from the USSR. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia.
Hmm.
Only one of the 15 republics remained, Georgia.
Interesting.
So I don't think they're going to get to 1991 unless they really... You're right. They have done 4 years in about 2 years of real time. So unless they start jumping ahead...
They'll have to jump ahead. Yeah, they'll have to jump ahead. But they did... They could do it. Like, they could reasonably do that. I think it really depends on, like, which way they want the story to run. You know, and I'm suspicious. Like, I really think that, you know, having everybody kind of go to Russia, like, all those people are in Russia. Think about that for a second. Like, all those characters, you know, are there.
Not all of us. Hey, Bizarro Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel. Bizarro,
yeah, so
Gabriel.
He's not there, but I don't see the party moving to Russia. I don't like that plot.
I don't think that there would be much to do there. I think it might be a bit contrived if they tried to sort of, you know, force that as a story. So I don't really see that happening. But, you know, I mean, the possibilities are sort of pretty wide open because, really, I mean, think about it. It could be anything. It could be that Paige, you know, decides to, you know, work on the side of her parents. It could be that Henry, you know, gets recruited. You know, it could be that Stan finds out who Philip and Elizabeth are, but the next 2 years are about him trying to, you know, cast a net around them and try to figure out, trying to, you know, undercover kind of, you know, without them knowing, figure out, you know, who they are and what they're about. Now that, if they did that from sort of a different perspective, that could be really fascinating because it would be sort of a different approach to a TV series, period, in general, you know, sort of, you know, have Stan then become the person who's got the secret to hide and have him be the person who's kind of, you know, that we see, you know, doing things where he doesn't want to be caught because he's trying to get away with, you know, whatever it is that he's plotting against Philip and Elizabeth for. So it could really turn into a really different thing. But, you know, but that's a big chance for the writers to take.
So in the stream of history, if they could somehow make it to 1989, it would be cool because in 1989 we had Tiananmen Square and we had the fall of the Berlin Wall. So it would be weird if they kind of come up right short of that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could be. I don't know. I have a weird feeling that we may see them in the far future. Like at some point in the series, we may see Philip and Elizabeth like old, and you know whatever happens with Paige and Henry. I don't know, but I think it's possible. I think it's interesting, you know, just trying to sort of, you know, toss around ideas about what the writers might do, because they're brilliant and they've not let us down with the story so far.
Yeah, and like we said, they're not really pinned to history because they've created such a rich assembly of characters that it, you know, I don't care when it ends. I just kind of want to see what happens to the people.
I do too. I really want to see what happens because I, you know, I think that these characters are really kind of on this is path right now. Like everyone, not just Philip and Elizabeth, but like everyone is kind of confronting their own truth. You know, the emotional landscape of their minds, of their souls. I think it's fascinating. Oh, by the way. I was going to tell you, it's a weird confluence of kind of life and, you know, fiction happened to me recently. I think it was last week. I was driving on, I was getting off of 285 and onto 400, which anybody from Georgia could tell you that is a nightmare right there. What I just said was like, you know, an hour's work or something. But I was doing that. I was listening to a podcast called Invisibilia, and it's done by these two girls, and now it's actually three girls who go. It's about like the interior of your mind, like in different situations and environments. And one of the episodes that I was listening to that day was about like misconceptions, and so this woman was reporting about this story that happened out on an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. And there were these Louisiana oil workers out there. And it was about kind of like how everything changed for them from being these tough guys who couldn't show emotion at all to like changing their lives entirely and the lives of their children and their children's children by teaching them to embrace emotion. And when they were talking about it, they were saying that the woman who introduced them to the ability to sort of, you know, to express themselves was this little blind French woman who had come to America in the 1980s and who had heard about this thing, this movement called EST. And they were describing it. And apparently, the guy who founded EST, there are videos of him out there and audio recordings of him out there actually conducting EST seminars. And I thought it was fascinating because, you know, knowing those, the Weisberg people and you know, Joe and Joel and, you know, and all the people who write for the Americans, I'm sure that they did their research, you know, and kind of like maybe saw videos of that dude who runs EST.
And, did you watch any of the videos?
I didn't. I've been too busy, but I really meant to, and I will. But yeah, I mean, they played like a, you know, like a little snippet of the audio, and he sounds like that dude that's in the meetings on The Americans.
Yeah, those guys all sound the same anyway.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. So there. Okay, so let's talk about the earlier seasons of the series. There are a few things that I noticed. I mean, like, it's really crazy because we podcast about this stuff. And when you realize, like, you missed something major or you got something really, really wrong, you know, it's funny when you realize that you're watching back or you get a clear fact about something and then you realize, like, you know, holy shit, I just, you know, I made myself sound like an idiot, you know, for like thousands of people to hear. But there are things that I've noticed in there that might be useful to us.
I like how we picked this series to podcast because it was kind of a, we jumped in pretty early with it.
We did. We jumped in early with it, and it was really sort of a real chance because this. I'll tell our viewers. I know you remember it, but when I first started podcasting with you, like before we did our first podcast ever, I was trying to get in on the ground floor of your Better Call Saul podcast, which at the time Better Call Saul hadn't started yet. And you were doing like a Breaking Bad sort of review lead in to Better Call Saul.
We were doing every episode of Breaking Bad that had Saul in it as a freshener for the Better Call Saul show.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you did that. I really wish I could have done it with you, but I couldn't. Like, you didn't pick me, but you liked me, and so you told me to take a look at West Coast Project, the website, and look at the shows that you had on the website and see if there was one of them that I wanted to podcast on. And because I'd seen the pilot of The Americans and I was really enthralled, just really, really drawn in to that series, I said that I wanted to do that one. And it had just wrapped the first season. And so I watched all of it on Amazon Prime. And we did our very first podcast, full podcast that we did together, was a review of season two and sort of a ramp up. I'm sorry, a review of season one and a ramp up for season two.
So, Jamie, in the show, do you think, because it's always interesting in these shows when people find out what other people know, like, do you think Tatiana's going to find out what Oleg did? Because Oleg is the one who kind of dropped the bomb on this at the end of the season four, telling Stan about William was the critical part of the ending of the season. And Tatiana and Oleg being together romantically, it seems like they were together romantically, right?
Well, they were, yeah.
So are they going to investigate that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know if Tatiana's even going to be around next season. I don't know if Oleg's going to be around next season, but I will say this. If he's not, I'm going to be really upset. But I don't know. I mean, because he's leaving, right? Ostensibly, he's leaving.
Do you think Stan will ever burn Oleg?
No.
Because he could, right? He could tell whoever comes next to replace them in the Residentura that Oleg was the source.
Yeah, he could. I mean, like, he really, really could burn him, but he's not going to, I don't think, because, you know, okay, so that's one of the things that I was actually thinking about while I was rewatching the series, because if you recall, at the end of season three, Stan got Oleg to commit treason. Like, he was trying to get information on Zenaida and trying to prove that Zenaida was a spy as opposed to being a defector.
Is Zenaida the one who got zipped up in the suitcase?
No. That was Annalise.
Annalise, yeah.
Zenaida is the Milky Way girl.
Oh, right. I always got Sineda wrong. I called somebody else Sineda, and I called her somebody else.
Right. Yeah, you were getting Tatiana and Zaneta mixed up at one point. But Zaneta is the Milky Way girl. She's a candy eater. And she's the person who was in the box and who was defecting. And she had on the oxygen mask. And she came over in an aircraft or a cargo plane.
Like Tyrion Lannister.
Right.
So they were going to trade Zaneta for Nina, right?
Well, they were going to try to, yes.
Turn her in. You give Nina back. Turn her in.
Right. Magad and the U.S. government put the kibosh on that. It was not going to happen, and it didn't happen. And we all know what happened to Nina. But
Another thing we don't know is, what happened to Gad? Why did what happened to Gad happen to Gad? Who were those three goons that went to talk to him?
Yeah, that's crazy. I was actually thinking about that today in the car coming home from work. My life sounds so boring, but I swear it's not. I have other stuff to do. It's just I'm really tired, and so I kind of, my brain kind of defaults to, the stuff that's kind of interior. But yeah. Okay, so, but wait, let me tell you the other thing that I thought was a really cool coincidence. In season two, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's season two. Nina is turned, right? She's working for Stan and spying on the Residentura. And she is dealing with Vasily. But by the way, do you remember that? Vasily used to be the resident. He was Arcady. He was the Arcady of that time. And when Vasily got arrested and brought back to the Soviet Union, that's when Arcady took that position. But the original resident was Vasily. And he was getting into things with Nina because Nina needed to manipulate him in order to get secrets for Stan, because Stan was holding this over her head now, the fact that she was, sending stuff home to her family. So when Nina was in bed with Vasily one day, he said, "There is a spy. There's a mole. There's a mole in the Residentura. And when I find out who it is, I'm going to put a bullet in his brain." And I thought that was crazy because that's exactly what happened to Nina.
Yeah, and she was that mole. What about Misha? Do you even care about Misha?
No, not really. I like him. I really want to see kind of a little bit what happens with him. I was really excited about it when I saw him in, I guess it was episode 13, for season 4. But now I don't know. I don't know. I kind of want things to remain the same. I'm more interested in seeing what happens with Paige and, and Philip.
And Henry, I don't like Misha being an interloper into the Jennings family. He's the new son that Philip has to recognize. And I want Henry, and I want to see the story of Elizabeth Henry Page and Philip.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But they got something cooking for Misha because he's freaking coming. And he's going to find the travel. He knows enough, and he has a little bit of cash. He has some passports. You know he's going to fucking make it to Philip's door. So yeah. I just hope it's not tired sauce.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I don't know. I don't know what the heck's going to happen with him. I just can't see him blending into the family and being like, "Hey, how you doing, half bro and half sis?" I just don't see it.
Right, and I have no sympathy or powerful emotion about Misha. I'm glad he survived the Afghan war, but I don't really care what happens to him.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, he's not somebody we care about. That's normal. It's natural. I don't know what's going to happen, though. Maybe we will care about him. I don't know. Maybe he'll save Henry from getting hit by a flying hockey puck or something. I don't know. All right, there are a few things that I noticed otherwise. One of them was with Misha's mother. There was a really, like, her story arc within the season that she was there, which I think was the second season, was like a super boring story arc. And remember, I could not remember whether Philip had gone to like Central America or Eastern Europe to run into her. Do you remember me being like completely unsure about that?
Yeah, I don't remember now myself, even as you bring it up.
Okay, here's why. I'll tell you why. This was shocking to me. It was in New York.
Also, the other reason why is I don't really care.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly. Like, I don't care. I mean, that's a tertiary. Not even, it's like a quaternary character. I don't care about her. But it was interesting because I was able to fix, because that was like a little question in my mind. Like, where the hell was it that they met? It was there. And part of the reason why I was wondering about it is because there was that girl, the girl who was from, I think it was Nicaragua. Remember that girl who, she died, and you didn't remember it, and you looked it up because you were mentioning her, I think either end of last season or beginning of this season, and you were saying that it was some girl who Elizabeth had helped, and she was like somebody from Central America or something, like, and that she was in America, she was a spy, and she had like a little story arc. Well, it was this chick who was like pretending to be a college student, and she was from like Nicaragua or somewhere, and she was with this like congressional page or something, and she was trying to get secrets and like get access to his stuff and to the senator or the congressman that this kid worked for. He's like a college age boy, and he was a drug user. And that's how this girl met Elizabeth. And so Elizabeth had to use the girl's help to try to get access to something that was in the Capitol. And that girl ended up dying. But the way that she ended up dying was because of Larrick. Remember Larrick?
Mm-hmm.
Larrick actually killed that girl. I couldn't remember who did what happened to her. And you know, and everything, but Larrick killed her.
It's funny how we hate Larrick so much, and he was the most loyal American on the show.
he was loyal, but he was a serial killer. Like, that dude was a murderer, you know, with like a capital murderer.
Eh, that's all right.
He's really
a soldier. Soldiers have to kill people.
Yeah, okay. So everything's a war. All right, so one thing I thought was really, really weird was, I don't know if you remember this, but when Philip and Elizabeth had to go, this is during the Larrick storyline, right? Philip and Elizabeth had to go somewhere and, like, do some sort of weird mission. I don't know what the heck was going on. I still don't know. I watched it twice. I don't know what's going on with that thing. Like, they had to go somewhere and try to get in, like, break into some sort of military compound and do some sort of mission.
Wait, who did this now?
Philip and Elizabeth had to do this. The center made them do it. And it was involving Larrick. And that's why Larrick actually, this is the mission that actually started him on his killing rampage. Because Philip and Elizabeth killed somebody, some people that were his friends. This is the situation that happened when they found that guy who was a truck driver who could have given them access to this closed military base or whatever it was. And the guy, they took his truck, they tied him up, they tied up the truck driver. Elizabeth wanted to kill him, but Philip didn't want her to. And then they got into this military compound or whatever it was, and they were getting away with whatever it was they were doing. It was something outside, and they were almost done. Like, they were going to get out of it, like, scot-free. But then this guy happened upon them by accident, and he didn't really buy the like, Philip's uniform, and he started to scream. And Philip covered his mouth. Like, he pulled him on the ground, and he covered his mouth, and he's like, please be quiet. Please, please be quiet. And this is, like, the moment where Philip kind of, like, he's, in this episode, he's starting to crack, where you can see he doesn't want to do this stuff anymore. And so he's telling guys, please be quiet. You're going to be okay. Just don't scream. And the second he takes his hand off the guy's mouth, the guy starts screaming again. So Philip has to strangle him, and he kills him. And like, after that, he's not the same. Like, he's not the same. And then, you know, up until the end of season three, where he's talking to Elizabeth in the bedroom when Reagan calls the Soviet Union the evil empire. Up until that moment, he's never the same. Like, he just gets worse and worse and worse in terms of his psychology.
Yeah, by the way, that girl was Lucia. She was from the Sandinistas.
Right, yes.
And the reason she was after Larrick because he killed her family. He killed friggin' everybody. Yeah, he killed her family.
Yeah, he killed her father. Yes, he did. He killed her family. And she wanted to kill him. She wanted to kill him. And it was, like, beyond reason, you know, what she was trying to do. And Elizabeth warned her very nakedly. She said, listen, I know this dude is horrible. He's a monster, but he's our monster, and you need to get your hands off of him. Like, leave him alone. And the girl just refused to do it. She refused to leave him alone. She went and attacked him in his house. Like, she was waiting for him inside his house and tried to kill him. And when the thing first went down, like, all he did was, like, beat her. And then, like, tie her up and then call Elizabeth and was like, come and get this thing out of my house.
Take care of it. Yeah, take care of it.
Yeah. And Elizabeth went there, but then Lucia attacked him again, and he killed her.
Yeah, those Sandinista girls are hot as pistols. Short temper.
Right. Yeah, but that was Lucia. And I think the reason that we started even talking about that was because Gabriel brought her up to Philip in the episode in season three where Philip got the Afghani Kush for Kimmy. The reason why you and I ever questioned about Lucia was because Gabriel brought her up in the conversation that he was having with Philip in the episode where Philip got the Afghani Kush for Kimmy. Like, Gabriel brought up Lucia for some reason and saying that she had died. And then in our podcast, you and I were talking about it, and I was like, I don't know who that is. And then you described who she was, and I said, oh, yeah, I remember her. Like, Elizabeth had to go help her. She and her boyfriend were taking drugs and blah, blah, blah. But that's the reason why we even thought about her at all, was because Gabriel was talking about her in season three. So, yeah. So, there are so many things I've noticed about the series from then until now. One of them was that this show, I know that show is extremely well written, and you know it, and so does our audience and the general, you know, Americans viewing audience. Everybody knows how great that show is, but if you go back and watch it, like, if you watch the episodes knowing what's happened, it's even more amazing to see how they've woven this story, because it really does seem as though they knew from the beginning what would be happening now. You know, just the way that they've set up this story, it's just so great.
Well, I'm sure to a great extent that they did. They probably have this mapped out somehow. And they fill in the pieces as they go. And then they go, oh, that was interesting. Let's develop this little side avenue because that works so well. Let's embellish it a bit.
Maybe they do. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, writers tend to say that, you know, audiences and fans of shows want to believe that writers have it all planned out from the beginning. But I think, you know, like you do, I think that, you know, they may not know every aspect of the story, but they've got to have some sort of an impetus, some sort of a, you know, like a leaning in one direction or another about, you know, whatever it is that's going to happen. And so I think that that's possible, that they have this, you know, thought, maybe like a really broad, maybe, you know, sort of high level thought about something, and they may lean in that direction and the story gets fully, you know, fuller from that direction. So I think you're right. So, I'm going to ask you, what is your, if you go back and think about like all of the seasons of the series, what's your favorite season?
I like the very beginning. I think I like the first season the best. Because getting to know the characters was really interesting. I don't know. I think a lot of this season, when they got really tired and worn out in the middle. Wait, was Kimmy last season mostly, or was she like the beginning of this season?
No, she was almost entirely last season.
Yeah, that was bad too. I didn't like Kimmy. And I didn't like when Philip was so tired because he was running around with three different women. Martha and his wife and Kimmy. And I mean, that stretch was kind of tedious, I think. But I liked when we first started to get to know the people.
Yeah, I like that too. I like the first season. I think the first season was really special. Like, it was a really, really excellent season of television in general, and for the series, I think it was probably the best one. But for me, the series just gets, I don't know, it's just, it's so enjoyable. And, I don't know if, you know, I think maybe season four might be one of my favorites, you know, just because there was so much, you know, real story there. There was real like flesh to dig into, you know, with Nina. We finally got the conclusion to Nina's storyline. We got to see more of Anton Baklanov, which Michael Aronov, I adore him as an actor. That was fantastic getting to watch that. And speaking of which, actually, I don't know if you remember this, but Anton Baklanov's first episode in the series, I think it was in season two, he's the guy, you know, who's stuck in Russia now. He's the repatriated guy. I'm sure you remember him. But when
Nina's squeeze,
right? So but when we first met him, he was in a synagogue in Washington DC, and he was giving a talk about escaping the Soviet Union, and Philip was in the audience dressed as, well, disguised in really, honestly, one of his much, much better disguises. Probably one of the best disguises I've seen him in. He just looked like a regular Jewish guy with like a, you know, like a Van Dyke, you know, goatee mustache combo. Really, really, really handsome looking in that episode. But that episode contains a scene that is still the thing that it's one of the most emotionally moving things I've ever seen. And I tested when I rewatched that episode recently, like a few weeks ago, I tested myself to try to see if I could get through this one scene without crying. I could not do it. I watched it over like three or four times. Couldn't do it. It's the one where they've taken Anton, I don't know if you remember this episode, but I think it's the one called Safe House, or it's the one before or after it, because you know how they switch the episodes around sometimes. But this is the one where they're trying to capture Anton, like Philip and Elizabeth are. But they can't get him. Like, he gets away, but they capture one of his buddies, like one of the people that was supposed to be like watching out for him and keeping him safe. And then Philip takes this guy. And he's in like a really dangerous kind of safe house area. And this is where we meet Kate. And Kate is the handler that comes between between Claudia and Gabriel. So she's only there for a little bit because Larrick kills her.
Nobody comes between me and Claudia.
Right? Hey, Gabriel.
Bizarre. Gabriel's a little hot for Claudia.
Yeah, he might be. I think he might be. So anyway, Kate is there in that episode. We get introduced to her then. But Philip is in that funky, grungy safe house. And when they finally get the word that they're going to switch this dude that Philip has for Anton, they drive out there. They do the switch off. And at this point, Philip's like really broken down because that dude is the one who was saying things like, I hide what I do. I don't hide who I am. I go home for Passover, but you hide everything about yourself. And he was that guy who tried to like bring Philip back to his conscience, basically.
Yeah, Anton was a dick. The only time I liked Anton was when he got thrown on that boat. I felt sorry for him then, but because he was like having extramarital affairs. He was living the high American life. He wasn't very likable when he was here in the U.S.
No, he wasn't. I mean, like that wasn't him who was saying all this stuff to Philip. But yeah, I mean, like he was an asshole. And that's the only thing that makes me not cry every single time I see him on this series, because he was an ass. I mean, like he got out, which is, and he had a long suffering life and everything, which gives you sympathy for a person. But he was hiding, himself, and he had a mistress, and, and he was just like all, I don't know, just really kind of full of himself. And that was rough. Like that was hard to take. And, the way his situation ended, it filled me with sympathy for him that I still have. But yeah, he was an ass. But anyway, so when they do the switch, like Philip is already primed, like he's already depressed and sad because he's had to do all these awful things so far, in season two. He's still killing people and, doing all this awful stuff. And then he gets this dude, Anton, in the back of the car, and he's got to take him and send him back to Russia. And this has got to be, like, really weighing on him because he doesn't want to go back to Russia. Like, Philip doesn't want to go back to Russia. And he's got Anton in the car. And Anton, and I would tell our audience, and I'll tell you, Mike, go back and watch that episode and watch that scene in the car.
No, I remember it. Anton's begging him, please don't make me go back.
Yes, please.
That's the scene that makes you cry?
Oh, my God. Every time. Like, I can't think about it right now or I'm going to start to cry. Like, Michael Aronoff killed me in that episode. And it wasn't just him. I mean, it was Matthew Reese. Like, Matthew Reese's acting. That dude, I'm telling you, like, he could really act any part. Like, he could really act in anything because he was so good in that scene. That scene is probably one of the best things I've ever seen. And I don't know if that episode was, like submitted for award consideration, but it really should have been if it wasn't. And I would be surprised if it wasn't. It was just so good.
By the way, speaking of coming between Gabriel and Claudia, when Kate had her brief stay on the show, you remember who killed Kate?
Yeah, Alaric.
Of course. You call Hans the murderer, it's really Alaric the murderer.
Larrick, no, Larrick
is. Spun her around on that ceiling fan.
Larrick is a serial killer. Hans is a murderer. I actually had to watch that again, the episode with Hans. And you remember the story arc, right? That awesome, amazing. Was it you who called me? I don't know if it was you, Mike, who called me one afternoon, and I was watching it, and it was that particular episode. I don't know. Or maybe it was that the same day that you and I talked about it on our podcast that didn't air, the one that you haven't put up there yet. But anyway, so whatever it was, I was rewatching.
What podcast have I not put up there yet?
The one that we recorded maybe a week ago.
That's not an American. That's like a scathing tweet. That's a BS podcast.
Right, it is. It's total BS, but I liked it. I liked our conversation. But no, it wasn't an Americans podcast, but we talked a little bit about the Americans on it because we were talking about music from the 80s, and I was talking about Fleetwood Mac because they had a really good song in that episode. that particular. It was that. What was it? That guy's name. Remember the guy from Africa? Nagobo.
Yeah. That's the one where they put the necklace of tires on the guy.
That's right. That's the one. And, so anyway, so after that episode, that guy Todd, he's the one who witnessed that happening to, what's that guy's name? It started with a V. I can't remember the guy who got burned with the tire. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, so he's the guy who kind of looked like Walter Taffet. I guess that was the name of the episode, actually. It was Walter Taffet was the name of the episode because that guy appeared in the same one. But anyway, so that episode was where Todd witnessed that whole tire burning thing. And that episode was the one where Elizabeth, or in the next one, where Elizabeth told Hans the murderer that he couldn't work with them anymore because she thought that Todd had seen him. I don't know if you remember that happening, but we talked about it in our podcast. And
Hans fell off the roof on that one.
Right.
Or something, jumped down the stairs too early.
Right, exactly. And so that's why he killed Todd. And he went into this, like, it looked like a, like the basement of a library or something. Like, Todd was putting books away. And, you know what I just realized? There are two Todds who are white supremacists in the series that we watch, because there was the one from Breaking Bad and who was a Nazi, and then there's like this Todd who's also like he's South African.
It's a good Nazi name.
Right. So anyway, so Todd's like putting books away, and Hans, the almost murderer, goes in there and shoots him in the eye. And then Todd's eye is like gone. There's like a bloody hole where his eye used to be, but he's not dead. Like, you know, the murder attempt hasn't worked, and so Hans the murderer ends up killing Todd with
his
bare.
Why is Hans any more of a murderer than anybody else?
I don't know. I think it's because I just don't.
Elizabeth's
like
the murderer. Phillip's the murderer.
Right. No, but Hans is worse because he does it for his own self-interest. Like because Elizabeth told him, you'll still help the cause. You'll just do it in different ways. You just can't do this anymore because Todd saw you. So he kills Todd because he wants to be in that mix. He wants to be a spy. He's doing it for his own self-interest.
Well, he wants Elizabeth to be impressed with him. So much of this show is driven by like sexual lust, wanting the opposite sex, the person of their desire to like admire them or to win them over somehow.
Yeah,
look at the guy who was the soccer guy that got Annalise folded up in the suitcase. That was all sex. This whole Elizabeth Hans thing, she's using him for that. It's like Philip and Martha, Kimmy, all these people. You know, they're driven by like their primal urges of sex.
Well, okay, so I think that's how people are a lot of the time, you know, like human beings in regular life. So I think that's a good observation that you've made.
The only other guy, Ugobo or Gumbo or whatever his name was, the only reason he wanted to kill Venter because he was like mad that he thought Venter was going to kill him, right, back in South Africa.
Oh, yeah, no.
It was a political. That wasn't sex. That was a political motivation.
Right, but yes, but it's still base. Like, it's a really base thing because the reason why Nagobo was even there is because they knew that the fact that Nagobo was black, that he was South African kind of like freedom person, right? Like, he was against apartheid, that would draw out Venter, and they would be able to capture Venter because of Nagobo being there. And that's exactly what happened. So it was a very animal kind of, you know, hind brain instinct, you know, that happened in that situation too. It just wasn't sex. It was something else. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff that's kind of out there. I know that the story for Gad has got to get like something to it. You know, there's got to be an explanation for what happened with Gad. And I would be really curious to know from Joe and Joel what it was that caused that story, because it feels very open-ended to me. Like, either there's something much better there, like there's a lot more story behind it, or they kind of were like, we'll do this story. Nah, we'll let it drop. Because I don't get it. I don't know why Gad had to die, and it was in such a weird circumstance. So there's got to be more coming.
Oh, yeah. They'll tell us what those three guys were doing, for sure. And I'm sure it'll be a good reason. I'm not worried about that at all.
Well, good. Okay, good. I'm glad you're confident about it. All right, so I would like to see like a follow-up with Anton. I want to know if he ended up dead or if he got free or what happened with him. Juice Jar Guy. Oh, my God. Oh, Mike.
You're never going to see Juice Jar Guy. You probably won't see Anton.
We don't, you know what? We don't need to see Juice Jar Guy again, because I watched it back. I watched back that episode that he was in, and I know what it is that he had. It was a jar of lemonade. Now, it still doesn't belong, because you're not supposed to put your open jar of lemonade in the cabinet in your kitchen. That's a no-no.
Yeah, put it in the fridge, dude. Unless he's hiding it, like it was up real high. But she didn't care. She was an alkie too. Maybe that was his sin, is like they're both supposed to be on the recovery and he was hiding it from her, that, you know, we're both in recovery, but I'm still drinking.
Oh, I mean, it was lemonade, because like I've seen that actual jar in like my neighborhood grocery store, like Publix. Like they have it. They sell that. It's like an organic product.
You don't think that jar was hot spiked with alcohol? It was just a jar of lemonade? And they're both alcoholics and they're both struggling? That was a hidden thing of alcohol.
It could have been, but it was mixed in with that lemonade, because I recognized the color of the lemonade. But I'm so glad.
Well, that's a perfect disguise. It's like, oh, it's just lemonade, honey. But no, exactly. That guy was sipping on his gin and juice with that.
So, yeah, Mike, I mean, but I'm just so glad to know what it was, because I felt like such a doofus, because I've been like pining to know what that was in the jar. And I bet the Jays were like, just watch it back.
Yeah, you're morbidly obsessed with that jar. That's crazy.
Not anymore, though, because now I know what was in it. It was that organic lemonade.
Yeah, and several ounces of vodka.
Right.
Green alcohol.
Right. All right. So one thing I realized while I was rewatching the series is that you have such an effect on my brain. Like, your jokes actually really freaking stick in my head, Mike, because I'm like watching these episodes and like, just, we're talking about Juice Jar Guy. Like, I can remember the episode where you said, like, he was sitting there talking to Elizabeth with this savvy drunk eyes. And I saw the, like, when I was watching the episode, I was like, oh my God, that's the moment that Mike's talking about. And it's like I had like these repeated moments like throughout the series where I would just burst out laughing while I was watching this serious show or a serious scene in the show, because I would remember some crazy shit that you said during our podcast.
Well, it's good to be funny in such a... Some of this show is so freaking gloomy that you gotta laugh at some of it.
Yeah, but I want you to know you brought some light to my life.
By the way, we should reveal that we've had FBI Mail Robot on a couple of times on our show. He's not some creation of ours with some sound effect machine that we have. He's really a guy character on Twitter that we found, FBI Mail Robot, at FBI Mail Robot. We tweeted him, and he came on, and he talked to us.
By the way, that you remember the episode that we did with him? I think it was the last one we did with him for season four, where it was the episode where Gad died. And at the end of our podcast, he had that fantastic line where he said, "Good night, John Boy."
Yeah.
Well, one of our super fans tweeted that, and Joel liked it. It's Joe Weisberg and Joel
Fields.
Joel actually liked the tweet that our super fan tweeted. So that "Goodnight, John Boy" line was pretty fantastic.
It is funny. I wonder if those guys ever listened to our podcast.
I don't know. I'd be curious to know if they do, too.
They got to be in L.A. traffic sometime and like say, "Yeah, what the hell? I'll listen to these guys."
You know what I think? I think that.
By the way, Jamie, we made a couple blunders. Sorry to cut you off there. You were like, "Oh, they'll get another grant from Georgia to do next season down in Georgia." They're doing this in Brooklyn. We should have known that.
No, I know that. Like, I know where they are. No, actually, I didn't. I forgot because I don't, like, remember them saying. But that's where they shoot the – that's where they record their podcast. No, when I was saying the thing about Georgia, I was saying, like, if they wanted to be on location in Russia, they could pretend like they were in Russia and shoot it in Georgia. But yeah, they shoot the. I was thinking they either shoot the show in DC or they shoot it in New York.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah, they shoot it in Brooklyn. Yeah, it's like Gowanus, Brooklyn or something, or Gowanus, New York or something like that.
They had to make that bridge look like a Washington bridge. There's not that much dramatic topography in Washington, D.C. In New York, in Brooklyn, I guess where they were, there's more of a mountainy gorge and a river and all that. I don't know. Wherever they shot it, they had to make it look, they had to tame it down a little bit, I think.
Wow.
I think, unless I said that backwards, the bridge in Washington isn't as dramatic as it looked in the real life shot that they really did it in.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's either that or the opposite.
All right. So here's another thing that I didn't realize the first time. Like, I thought this was something different, and it wasn't. So the end of last season, when Philip did his spy striptease and he took off his wig, I was thinking he had prosthetic stuff on, like a nose and stuff, but he didn't. It was just his hairpins and his wig.
I didn't like that scene when he showed Martha, you mean?
Oh, I know you didn't. I know you didn't like it because you tried to skip over it in our recap.
It was like, okay, big deal. He took off his hairpiece. And there he is. There's Philip underneath it.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So that was really funny because, you know, we have talked so much about Philip not looking different in, like, in any of his disguises. And it's so true. I mean, like, he really, really doesn't. But when you see him sort of change, you know, like that kind of makes a difference.
I actually thought it was a really good scene when they showed the artist mock-up of who they thought Philip was and who they thought Martha was. And they were totally different than how they really look. Because that probably is true in real life. If you just change a little bit about your face, it makes the memory version of you so super different in people's memories that it probably is pretty effective.
You know, that's really, really, really insightful of you because I've struggled with that. Like, I'm like, why would it be so hard, you know, like for somebody to, like, you know, if you have on, like, I mean, why wouldn't it be so easy for somebody to tell who you are? If you, like, change your hair, you'd think there's your big face right in the middle of everything.
Didn't they show an artist rendition of Martha in one of the last episodes? And, like, Adderall was like, shit, that ain't Martha.
Yes.
That ain't the Martha I remember.
Right. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's really hard to tell, you know.
So I don't think we'll see Martha again. I think the one person that they kind of really put into my unfriendly zone was Tim, but he's potentially the most interesting mystery so far remaining, one of the most interesting remaining. Like, who the hell is he, and what's he going to become?
All right, Mike, so you made fun of me because I texted you one day and I was like, I've decided Tim is a Russian, and you're like some sort of snarky, kind of funky, sarcastic comment back to me. I don't know what it was. I had to ignore it. but I really do. I think he's working for Russia. I really do.
Well, now he has to be. If you do the entertainment television movie math, he has to be. He's stuck around too long to be like, oh, just dumb old Pastor Tim who got lost in the, ran out of gas in Kenya and got caught. There's got to be more to him because they're too smart for him to be stumbling his way through this.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. It's interesting. And if you rewatch the series from the beginning, it just kind of informs that. Like, it really does. I mean, like, if you look at it from the point of view of like, okay, this dude is checking up on Paige. Like, he is part of that whole group that wants to, you know, indoctrinate the offspring of the, you know, original illegals and, you know, do this whole thing. If you look at it from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. And when he went missing, right, he went missing in Eritrea, right? Eritrea is, at that point in time, is communist. And so it makes a lot of sense that he would go missing, and he's like quote unquote missing, but we don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was giving a, you know, brief to his outpost office of communists.
And plus, you know, that dinner party they had where Stan showed up at the last minute and Henry, you know, locked him into a seat at the table. He was too smart. Tim was too smart at that dinner party. Like, oh, this is interesting. What do we have here? This FBI agent is your next door neighbor, huh? And he knew he could have pulled the trigger and like flipped that whole plot up on its head if he wanted to. But he was too smart and clever. So now he's like kind of smart and clever and not the dumbass who runs out of gas in Eritrea. So there is more to, there has to be more to him just by math of television.
Right.
They've made him more important.
Right. And, you know, and it's not only that, but it's like how smooth he is. Because remember, you and I were like beating the story across the head when that whole thing happened. And he's all like, yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to forgive you. And I don't know. And bring Paige to me when she, you know, when I come back from Kenya. I want to counsel your family. I mean, he sounds like a guy who has no fear. Like, he's not afraid of anybody. And then that moment where he told Elizabeth, you know, the thing about, like, prayer and belief in God and faith and all that, and he says, none of that matters. It only matters how you treat one another. That's not a religious dude. That's not like a Jesus dude. That's like somebody who has something else going on.
Yeah. And now his wife, I don't like his wife. I don't think his wife's interesting at all. And that whole I summon you in for the hug wave that she gave Paige that time, that was like really, I thought, pretty distasteful. Like, I'm in control of you and I summon you in for the hug.
Right.
I don't like Paige liking the baby. I don't like Paige floating in and out of frickin' favor with them either. One minute she hates them. One minute, oh, that's that Alice talking out of line again when she shouldn't be talking. She's flaky. Paige is flaky about her relationship with them. I don't like that part of the plot.
And I feel like she has been pretty consistent in, like, that she loves Pastor Tim and his wife. She got mad about Alice because Alice has a huge freaking mouth, which actually, that, like, that kind of stuff makes me angry. Like, that kind of stuff, when I see it on TV or if I see it in real life, it makes me angry. Like, people who have this kind of, like, I'm better than everybody else kind of attitude, like, oh, I'm so great because I'm, like, whatever, spiritual or smart or whatever it is. And then they show themselves to be hypocrites.
And yeah, but then Paige goes over, like, hey, I'm supposed to tell you guys that I'm making up with you again. And I want you. And that's bullshit. I don't like that.
Right.
She's,
you're right.
One time she's potentially really smart spy material. That's hard to say. Smart spy material. And then next she's like a dopey teenager again. You know what? I'm going to betray my parents to you because I don't like them being communists or whatever. I don't like that flippy floppy part of Paige's personality.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so part of it is her being a teenage girl, who are some of the most insufferable beings on the face of the planet when they're being teenagers. I mean, they're just insufferable, you know? But so I think part of that is really, you know, good. Like, it's accurate writing. But yes, I'm with you. Like, she was super irritating to me. And I had to relive her going through the whole thing when, like, after she found out about her parents, and she's all, like, in the kitchen in the morning while Henry's upstairs yelling about, well, who's all these people? Well, I mean, Henry's my brother, but I don't have an aunt. And, you know, she's, like, super loud about this stuff. It was just as irritating the second and third time around that it was the first.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do with Tim and Alice. If Tim's smart, then Alice, by, I guess, that same math should also be smart. But I don't see her that way. I'm starting to believe that Tim is some sort of smart, playing two ends of something agent. So I'm ready to give him credit for that. But I don't see that in Alice yet.
I don't think Alice is anybody. I think she's like just like somebody that Tim just like married. He's like, okay, I need a beard.
She's past her arm candy.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think Tim is a communist. And I think that his wife is clueless. I don't think she knows anything about what's going on. And I think that Paige is, I don't know. I don't think she's going to join the family business.
You know, I'm scrolling through my notes here. One thing that is interesting about Martha is her father still sniffing around for where she is. That might portend some further action with Martha.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope we see Martha again, but it kind of fits in with my whole thought about this everybody going to Russia thing. Okay, so let's count them. All right, so Nina's dead, but she's in Russia. Okay, so Anton, Arkady, Oleg, Martha, Misha, sorta, right?
Tatiana.
No, Tatiana's staying here. She's staying in Washington at the residency. And then Gabriel is telling Philip and Elizabeth to go to Russia. So there's like a whole bunch of our regulars there. I don't know where Zenaida is. She might be in Russia. You know, so I don't know.
What could happen in Russia, though? Russia is... It's boring. There's no danger and there's no future.
It's Matryoshka dolls.
Yeah. And
right? Those nesting dolls.
Yeah. And who's the dude? Baklanov's there. Did you say him?
Yeah. Anton.
But his plot's kind of fizzed out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right, Jamie Tilley, Friends About West Coast Project. Look us up on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Like us, comment on us.
That's right. And you can subscribe to us from anywhere, really, because I have this thing called, this app called Podcast Addict. And you can just search us, like, on there. Search West Coast Project or search by, the show, and it'll pull us up. And you can just hit subscribe on your app, and it'll put us in there.
All right, Jamie, have a great 4th of July weekend. That's a good ending for the Americans.
Awesome. Thanks. You too.